Alright, time for another Google is Evil. DoNotGod.com. Video presentation. Yes. So, every now and then some stupid video sort of looks like it's going to touch on a subject that could possibly matter or could be reasonable, and of course it's done poorly and, you know, it's just garbage. Lots of garbage. All garbage, really. So anyway, this subject of human extinction. So, you know, in the scientific context, this is supposed to be a scientist, Sabim Hassenfelder, something like that. Anyway, you know, and scientifically, you can kind of just draw the picture and try to figure out how humans evade extinction. And there's really not too many ways they can do it. You know, they really can't get far enough away, you know, into the galaxy to ever get to what might be a place where they could actually spawn, you know, more humans in any kind of usefully survivable context. And the whole idea of sending humans into space, you can just imagine all the ways that they will self-destruct before they ever get anywhere, you know, in a little closed vessel. But anyway, not very practical. You know, is coming up with some way that you could regenerate this crap on some other planet that has some sort of survivability. You know, where you're going to really be capable of having the time, you know, for humans to do whatever it is they do. But anyway, the real point is that if you're going to talk about human extinction, okay, first you can concede that there's, you know, a pretty good probability that we're going to go extinct anyway. And that if we are going to go extinct, the biggest threat to that happening would be our own volition. By the fact that once you get a little bit smart, in terms of, you know, you're maturated in a true environment where the truth matters, you'll realize that life is very cruel. I mean, all those little skulls in the background kind of indicate some of that. Cruelty is bad, okay? So you don't do cruelty. Cruelty is in the game you play. And that's pretty much the game of life. It's just cruelty. It doesn't go anywhere. It's, you know, silly ambitions, and you pay a big, huge price in terms of, you know, horrific suffering for the mediocric accomplishment of some self-delusion of, I satisfied one of the little things on my list of things to do. You know, I did one of them. Yeah, wow. You're so special. So, yeah, once you get past that whole you're so special crap, you know, and you realize just what life is made out of, the, you know, millions of years of destroyed Frankenstein monsters, you know, just, you know, all these demonstration models to prove a DNA molecule, and they all just got annihilated in this brutal and horrible way, you know, to perfect a molecule, and perfect it in some by silly standards, like it beat up everything else and killed it and ate it. You know, it didn't do anything meritorious, except create cruelty. So, yes, the biggest threat for human extinction is the fact that if you allow the human race to evolve culturally to a place where it doesn't primarily incubate its new players in moronic ignorance, then they'll be aware of this cruelty word, and they'll get the concept, and they'll be smart enough to say, why would I perpetuate this? There's no good purpose here. And they'd say it's too cruel. They'd say, no, I don't need to make it twice as cruel to decide it's cruel enough. You know, it's cruel enough just the way it is. You can make the argument that, yes, people just acquire a silly standard and they say, oh, yeah, well, it's on balance, okay. Well, their balance sucks. If you had to go back 500 years you'd say, how the fuck did you assholes survive? How did you have any will to live at all? I mean, your life expectancy sucked. Your kids, you watched your kids die. I mean, the whole thing, your wife, it was just horrible. But, you know, and then you had to shit in the pot, and you had to walk on streets covered in it, and it was horrible. Why the fuck would I say, oh yeah, let's do that? You would say it's far less than good enough, I think. I think you would say, if you really had to live in that dark and grungy and smelly and stinking world, you'd say, yeah, what the fuck are we doing this for? This is cruel. All right. So we'll play the video. Yeah, we'll see what kind of mess she makes of the subject. So it has this idiotic title. All you ever wanted to know about human extinction, but were afraid to ask. I don't know what the little thumbs up means. Who knows? The yuck face and skulls in the background. Whatever. I mean, you know, this is how you could promote a right to die video by putting skulls in the background, and you know, but no, it's really just about finding dignity for the human race. Will the human race ever find dignity? Yeah. Or will it keep pissing in, you know, its own face with its religions and its other silly loop-de-doo bullshit? Its little Heisenbergs and its, you know, to get to the scientific side, its wormholes and its, you know, dark matter and entanglement and quantum computering and, oh, it's just all fables.
Some topics we cover on this channel are a little...
Oh, we cover blah, blah, blah. Oh, she's turned into such a phony. Ugh.
Yuck. Heavy. So today I want to talk about something light-hearted. Human extinction. What's the risk of human extinction? And what are the biggest factors that contribute to the risk? That's what we'll talk about today.
Yeah, yes, but not in any kind of rational context. Because, yes, it's all... This is sort of like the Drake equation, you know, when they play the game. How many living other living civilizations are there in space? They just make up numbers. So, I mean, most of these threats, okay, you have to just make up the number. And it's kind of bullshit.
Many thanks to all our supporters on Patreon, and especially those of you in Tier 4 and higher.
Yeah, fuck you, really. Keep supporting mush on the internet.
This channel would not be possible without your help.
Well, yeah, we did have a channel without their help, you know, it's just that you couldn't make a living at it. So, you know, you couldn't afford your green screen and all that crap without their help.
Why is Sabina talking about human extinction?
Because she ran out of subjects. That's why, of course. She ran out, that's it, there's a reason, yeah. So, who knows, she'll be talking about sewer frogs next, or, you know, they have to go look at the, what's trending? You know, go find the trending subject. Talk about it.
Personal hobby? No, I got into this through my PhD thesis.
Oh, whatever, sure you did. Her, you know, her PhD is in like dark matter bullshit physics. She, you know, it really is just bullshit. You know, she claims the rest of physics is bullshit, and then she's involved in a big pile of bullshit soup. She wrote some recent book that's complete crap, like the existential something or other. Like, somehow she has some insight on any of that kind of crap, whatever that existential crap is in the first place, but the meaning of life, like she was going to tell us what it is. Yeah.
Not because the thesis was that bad, but because it was about the production of black holes at the Large Hadron Collider.
Well, yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. So she did his thesis on a fake, phony, bullshit notion that somehow because you're creating energy, you're going to make a black hole, which, you know, theoretically, there aren't any anyway. The whole thing is just made up. There's heavy things in the universe. Massive things. Black hole. You know, infinitely deep well. No, I don't think so.
At the time, a lot of people were scared that such a black hole could eat up the planet. The reaction I saw to this from almost all particle physicists was to laugh it off. I got the impression they couldn't even contemplate the possibility they might accidentally kill us all. So they just discarded the idea as ridiculous. Most of them still...
Oh, who knows if that's exactly the truth. They just said, what's the risk? The real risk that they so critically misunderstand how energy works that they think they can create a, you know... I mean, it's a thought I've had. I mean, there's probably are some ways you could trick the universe, you know, in terms of creating some phenomenon that would be chain reaction, and the whole universe would turn into jello. But what are the odds? Yeah, no, it's probably not going to happen.
Do this today. Remember when they didn't bother with enough lifeboats on the Titanic? It was kind of like that. The idea that...
They actually did have, as I understand, they had enough lifeboats. They just didn't put enough people in the lifeboats. I mean, they had lifeboats with 16 people in them. So if they would have had the lifeboats at capacity, then they probably would have had enough lifeboats. But they were too stupid to realize that they can't, you know, put 17 people in the boat and say, right, launch it. Yeah, that was dumb.
A particle collider might destroy the planet by creating a black hole wasn't quite as stupid as particle physicists wanted you to believe. I'll say a little more about this later.
I don't know, so that's pretty boring, so we'll skip that part, right?
But this is what got me thinking about human extinction. We shouldn't discard the possibility of extinction as silly because it's never happened before. We should take this threat seriously.
Okay, so whatever the threat is, right? So, I mean, the threat is somehow has to be a threat that we somehow aren't appreciating. And so what are the threats? The environmental threat is sort of minimal, right? There's not going to be too many imaginable environmental crises. All right, that could wipe out all the people. I mean, that's pretty hard to do, you know, because some of them are living underground right now and doing all, you know, they're in places where even if the environment went to hell, they'd still be capable of maintaining existence. But yes, so it's not really about extinction, it's about mass extermination, you know, that kind of thing. Is a mass extermination, or extermination is the wrong word to use, right? Mass, what do you call it? The mass murder, no, you can't call it murder because the environment doesn't try to kill you. Well, anyway, it doesn't really matter.
Well, maybe not too seriously. I'm not good with that. But let's at least talk about it. What do we even mean by human extinction? After all, a lot of species have gone extinct, but sometimes that just means they produced offspring that eventually became genetically so different we called it a different species, like with the different species of Homo in our own past. The phrase existential risk comes from long-termists, a particular species of humans that we just talked about a few weeks ago.
Oh, who cares about that? anyway, so... yes, yeah, I think I did that long-termist retarded video, whatever the hell that was. This existential, again, this word, whatever the fuck that means. So she just said something that I don't even think is true, right? One organism doesn't really evolve into another organism in that kind of line, you know, where one day it's one species and then it just converts into another species and all of its members are now the new species. So it doesn't really happen that way. I mean, you're replaced by the new version, okay? And the new version has to essentially kill the old version. So you could argue that sort of like the Europeans killing the Native Americans, whereas them kind of annihilating their... there's no point in talking about because they hadn't changed into a new species. So, but the idea of the subtle change and the new version kills off the old version. So it isn't as polite as just evolving into something. The new version really has to go back and annihilate the old version.
The type of extinction they worry about is not a gradual transition to another species, but the end of all intelligent life on Earth. some might argue it's not all that clear there's intelligent life.
Right, right. So it's, oh, Banshee, her jokes are so predictable. Who proved there's intelligent life on Earth? What scientific experiment proved that? Yeah, clearly, it's a real point to make, okay? But what's the missing bit of intelligence? It's certainly not in our capacity to understand. So again, I could just say the word cruelty, right? It's one of the words that show up down here. Do people really understand what that means, or that, you know, they really should avoid being cruel, or, you know, and you could just argue that clearly people have these bizarre rationalizations to sit there and make most of the cruelty of life on, you know, living, just go away. They just pretend it doesn't exist so they can eat their little cruel dinner. You know, they can have a plate of cruelty, you know, and eat it and enjoy it. The only way they can do that is they have to pretend, you know, cruelty is spelled F-U-N or something.
Yeah. Earth to begin with, but Nick Bostrom, director of the Future of Humanity Institute, put it like...
Fuck. There's an institute. The Future of Humanity. And he's the poster child. Oh, I can't wait to be another Nick Boston. You know, I mean, where are we heading? I mean, I'm just saying, genetically, we're turning into shit because there's no standards for what gets to breed. You know, you really don't have to be healthy, you know, in any way, either mentally, psychologically. You know, in no way do you have to meet any standard to do the breeding thing. Any moron can do it. And so what's that say for the future? It says, well, it's not going to be... physically much of an organism. And then what's the future in terms of ideas? Is there really some idea out there that's... What are people living for? They're living to watch the World Cup. You know, some silly contest of some kind. Or they're in a personal contest. Or, you know, and all they're doing is, you know, managing their bitches, you know. Will the whore find out I'm married? You know, or something like that.
Like this. An existential risk is one that...
Oh, okay, here we go. Definitions. you know, who wrote the definition, right? It's one that threatens the premature, whatever that would be, right? We didn't deserve it. It was premature. It should have happened 4 weeks later. Of Earth originating intelligent life. So again, what's that category? Are the permanent and drastic destruction of its potential for desirable future development. I mean, what a pile of mush. Desirable. It has a desirable future. Well, frankly, I don't think you ever had a desirable future. Only morons, okay, would say, yes, let's continue to play the game cruelty. So you've been way behind on doing any of that desirable future thing.
That threatens the premature extinction of Earth-originating intelligent life, or the permanent and drastic...
I read it faster than you.
...destruction of its potential for desirable future development. But would human extinction really be that bad?
Right. You know, the idea that we become civilized and we start to decline the excessive population, because it truly is excessive, we're really pushing the environment, we can get... so much more out of our existence if we reduce the number of human beings trying to take a bag of it home. You know, just the fuel crisis alone is made less of a crisis, all of that kind of crap. We don't have to rush into things, lots of things that it solves the problem. And once we're doing the declining thing, I'm saying you're going to become addicted to it. It's going to be fun. So yeah, you'll keep doing it. It'll be more and more obvious how irrational it is to make new humans. There's just no use for them. If they don't have other humans to kill, they don't have anything to do. Okay, there's no function here. There's no project. We don't arrive on Earth and say, let me fix it. Okay, because the only part of it that's broken is the parts we break. So you have to break things to fix things. And so you have to invent the breakers, and then you have to, you know, have some portion of them decide to fix what the morons broke. Why would somebody do that on purpose?
Well, since you're asking, a few years ago, a group of psychologists from the UK did a survey on this. They recruited about 180 Americans and asked them whether extinction is bad. The exact question they used is, suppose that humanity went extinct in a catastrophe. This means that no human being will ever live anymore in the future. Would that be bad or not bad?
Right. So, and I, you know, I'm going to say, I'll guess that 50% of the people, you know, the 50% who haven't bred and done all that stuff and don't feel any urgency about it, and, you know, and then another, you could even say it's that there's another extra percentage just because you know that the only percentage driving the population increase is the tiny percentage at the bottom. The dumbest, stupidest, most moronic people on Earth are the ones who just, you know, keep on just saying, let me do this biological thing. Let's just keep doing something. You know, let's sneeze without a handkerchief. You know, let's keep doing it in this most uncivilized manner possible. They're not really intelligent life, frankly. You know, the ones who are breeding. They're really, really stupid. They have really idiotic ideas about how what reality is. They believe in, you know, voodoo and sky daddies, spaghetti monsters.
Yes or no? 78% answered that yes, human extinction is bad.
Okay, so I was wrong. But still, okay, it's 22% saying, recognizing that, okay, yeah, I don't really see the crisis. Okay, if there's nobody around to feel bad about it, then it's not a bad thing. Can't be bad if nothing feels bad.
And indeed, that means that one in five said extinction wouldn't be bad. You might wonder what.
Yay!
Whether those people were just trolling. But I believe most of them were quite sincere. That's because a later question asked them to explain why they felt that way. The people who said that extinction would be good typically had one of three arguments.
No good. No. All right, so this part's good. This is a real... So she's recognizing that, okay. So she does the video in a way like she's, you know, playing a game about risks and implying, you know, that the threats are external when, yeah, the number one threat is internal. And she could bring up the whole, like I said, the point that most nations, okay, civilized nations, would have declining population if they weren't importing morons. So if they stopped importing morons to increase their population, they would have a stable or declining population.
A, because humans are destroying the planet and nature'd be better off without us.
Okay, well, that's the scary one, right? Because that's really stupid. So that's a little disappointing. Okay, so if that's the number one reason for the 22%, then we're down to like 12% or something who really get it, that all the sentient life is better off. Okay, not playing the game cruelty. Cruelty is a really dumb game to play.
B, it's the natural way of things.
Oh, okay, well, that's another disappointing answer. Ew. But you didn't show us the exact question they asked for this follow-up. I mean, beyond, okay, they, I guess they could have just said, why did you answer the previous question the way you did? I guess these could be the choices they gave. A, B, or C, you know.
Or C, if no one's around, it can't be bad. Or to put it another way, if we chop down the last tree, it's okay because other trees can't hear it fall.
And they can't miss it either. So, yeah, they're not going to sit in some purgatory and lament all of the fucking cupcakes they're not eating. Oh, just think of all the Martian cupcakes we could be eating if we had Martians. Oh, what a tragedy. All the parades, too. We could have cupcake parades. No. Ooh. Because people are afraid of cruelty? Huh. That's silly.
The logic on the other side of the argument is also interesting. The most common reason people gave for why extinction is bad was...
It's going to kill me, and I don't want that to happen. Something like that.
Well, if everyone is dead, then I'm dead too, and I'd rather not be dead.
Okay, so yes, this was a very serious survey, apparently. Yeah. Ugh, fuck. So they probably gave them these four silly choices, you know, and people just picked the funniest one.
Or a similar statement about their children. The next most common explanation was some version of, what's there to explain? Of course extinction is bad. I guess that's all the people who haven't seen Jurassic Park. Okay.
Let's see. Oh, okay, so she's implying that it's not a bad thing that dinosaurs are extinct. But of course, if dinosaurs still exist, we know we'd have them in a zoo or something, right? I mean, you know, so it wouldn't be a problem. Just wouldn't go to Dinosaur Island. You know, if we had Tiger Island, you know, you wouldn't go to Tiger Island if, you know, just walk around on the trails, you know, right? You'd be smart enough to figure it out.
Hey. Having thus found tentative evidence that most people think extinction is kind of bad, what are the greatest risks? We can roughly classify existential risks into natural disasters we had no doing in and self-caused disasters.
Yeah, well, the self-caused ones really aren't realistically going to be, you know, hammer-falling kind of things. So there's some people who think we can do this global warming thing where we can really get to Mercury or our you know, Venus. No, not really. It's not going to be bad enough for humans to not find a way. They'll find a way.
At the moment, the self-caused disasters are the more urgent ones to deal with because they're multiplying as we develop more powerful technologies.
Well, okay. So again, they're really not multiplying to some point where they would cause extinction. So extinction's a little bit different than, well, it's a lot different than concentration camps and, you know, miserable life and, you know, most people dying and all that kind of stuff. So it's not the same thing. Not the same subject. A horrible degrade in human existence is not the same as extinction.
The risks that long-termists are currently most worried about are nuclear war, climate change, biotechnology, and artificial intelligence.
So, I mean, the artificial intelligent one is the one where you're just saying, what the fuck? How do people contrive this into being a threat? When they program the artificial intelligence. I mean, and you have to recognize the artificial intelligence can't really do any value logic without you telling him what's valuable, because the artificial intelligence can't feel. It can't measure anything through its own experience. It has absolutely no way to answer any value question because it can't personally taste anything. So he's just going to have to believe you when you say it's really bad. So you could say it's really bad to have a toothache. And then I could say, oh, it's really, really bad. Yeah, and one of those two people will program the AI. So it just depends on which one programs it. So what the fuck? This doesn't mean anything. There's no threat from an AI. It's just so, you know, so ridiculously stupid. It's just ridiculous.
The biggest problem with nuclear war isn't the detonations, and it is...
Okay, it isn't the detonations, it isn't this, it isn't that, it's that, oh yeah, well, it causes volcanoes or something, or I don't even know, you know what. The fact is that, yes, you can make a mess of the environment, but again, we know people will live in shit. So if they have to live in a sewer and blah, 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 yeah, they'll do it.
Isn't the radiation either. It's the enormous amount of dust and soot that'd be injected into the atmosphere. This blocks a lot of sunlight and causes what's been dubbed nuclear winter. Except it isn't just one winter.
Yeah, but we know those predictions are based on kind of sketchy science about what you people know about what energy is. So, you know, I don't want to be, you know. There were people who made all kinds of predictions when they blew up all the oil wells in whatever that fucking idiotic country was that isn't really a country. You know, when Iraq went into the shit country and tried to take back the territory. Kuwait. You know, and they were going to, oh, it's going to cause nuclear winter and all that. It didn't do nothing, you know, nothing. You know, and then people with Fukushima, you know, all kinds of predictions that are a little hysterical. And now, okay, it's really, you know, I wouldn't want to live anywhere within 500 miles of that mess. But further away than there, you're probably not going to notice anything.
It had lasted for more than a decade. Just a few months ago, an international team of researchers published a paper in the journal Nature Food with a new analysis for the consequence.
Right, we know that a bunch of people can't, you know, you're not going to sustain billions of people if the environment crashes. So the environment crashes, there won't be enough food, and yes, billions of people will have to do without, blah, 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 blah. That's not extinction.
Of nuclear war. They combined the predictions from a climate model with models for crop yield and fish stocks. For a major nuclear war, for example, between the United States and Russia, the nuclear winter could cause air temperatures to drop by more than 10 degrees on average.
Okay, so that's a pretty big drop. It's really cold. It really sucks. But we know there's people right now living, okay, in environments that are that nasty. And they don't import their food, and they don't import anything, so the trees survive, and then the reindeer survive, or something else survives, and they learn how to eat it, and so they survive. So it's really not a story. I saw one of those videos with, like, the coldest place where humans live, and horses, okay? There's little, fat, short horses, you know, that can survive, you know, these brutally cold temperatures.
Rainfall would also noticeably decrease because the summer monsoon would significantly weaken in some of the world's most fertile areas. This would lead to massive food shortages all over the globe faster than we can develop any technology to deal with the problem.
Yeah, faster than we can grow vats of algae or something, or make whatever, Soylent Green, you know, potato chips. But again, who cares? So this is just more argument about, okay, humans won't get along, they'll kill each other, blah, 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 blah. Still isn't going to be extinction.
They estimate that up to 5 billion people could die from starvation.
Yeah, so that's not the 8 billion we have. So there's still 3 left over, which is a lot.
Yeah, that's grim. What did you expect clicking on a video about extinction?
So, again, that's not extinction, okay? That's mass termination, right? It's really, you know, again, you're not really exterminating. So they call them exterminators, but they don't really exterminate, right? They just, you know, little area exterminate. So she's saying extinction in, you know, New York City. You know, I mean, it's not extinction on the planet. So what's the point? It's not real extinction. So why are these subjects when they're really not getting to real termination of the existence of cockroaches? I mean, not cockroaches, you know, in the bedroom or cockroaches in the living room. You know, it's not about...
In this figure, the red color is for places where the average amount of available calories falls below the amount necessary for survival. You see that for a major nuclear war, that's basically the entire world, except Australia, New Zealand, and Argentina.
Yes. But who cares? It's enough to feed way too many people. Okay, so you have less people, not a problem.
So cockroaches and crocodiles would be fine, don't worry.
Yeah, and if we can eat cockroaches, and we can eat crocodiles, so again, who cares? Again, this argument is about whether humans can survive, not whether it's going to be nasty. Because, of course, humans will accept nasty.
Climate change, too, the major problem isn't the primary effect. It's the secondary effects that impede our ability to recover from other problems. It's the consequences of an increasing number of natural disasters and droughts and fires that lead to economic distress, that upset supply networks, that cause...
So, again, all this crap doesn't have anything to do with some guy sitting in the International Space Station. It's not going to kill him. So, what's this... Why is this described as extinction? This is called... a train wreck or something. It's not going to end the existence of trains. Yes, you're going to wreck some trains. Okay, so what? You just make new trains, you rebuild the train population, you're back up to the same mess you were in the first time. So it's just, this is not extinction.
International tension and so on. Or to put this differently, we are only so many people and there's only so much we can do. If we're forced to constantly cope with climate change, other things won't get done.
All right, blah, blah, blah. Yes, life will be crappy. Crappier. Okay, it's that simple. And so, yes, there won't be any Super Bowl for a decade. You know, that kind of thing, right? It'll just be some stupid thing that happens and then we survive it and we pretend we learned from the experience, blah, 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 and we just build the same stupid straw house and, you know, and another wolf comes along and, you know, blows it down.
Climate change is unlikely to cause complete extinction on its own.
There you go. Okay, so why are you talking about it then? It's really not an extinction event. It's just a crappy life event.
Because it's a self-limiting problem. If economies collapse, carbon dioxide emissions will decrease, and in 200 years or so, we might be able...
200? So we know this isn't going to take 200 years to fix or to have to react to. So you're not going to, you know, it's not going to be that kind of thing. You know, not going to happen. You're just going to learn, you're just going to acclimate to the warmer climate. That's going to be the truth of it, okay? The world is going to get warmer, the water's going to rise, people are going to move inland, and we're just going to acclimate to having a much dirtier atmosphere, period.
Able to start over again. But in those 200 years, humanity will be extraordinarily susceptible to additional problems like a nuclear war or pandemics.
So again, more, why are pandemics any more, why are they more of a future threat than a past threat? So that's just more bullshit. And we know how they work too, okay? The fact is that we become immune and the attacking organism becomes less effective and all these organisms survive it. This isn't what they, you know, when organisms go extinct, it's rarely because of some virus, some parasite.
Months ago, a team of researchers from institutions such as the Center for the Study of Existential Risk in Cambridge and, again, the Future of Humanity Institute in Oxford published a paper in which they say it's necessary to consider such bad to worst-case scenarios and that this risk is dangerous.
So look, it's just a quality of life video. Okay, so we should really, I mean, it's a good subject. What should be the quality of human life? I mean, what should we have as a minimum expectation? So we could argue about how all the civilized countries figure that, okay, you know, these stupid welfare whores and crack whores, their kids shouldn't be blamed for what they are. We got to take care of them. We got to maturate them. We got to educate them. We have to do all this kind of stuff, or we're going to be labeled as cruel and stupid and we didn't take care of business and all of that crap. So those are all reasonable things to have a conversation about. But, you know, I would argue that the conversation doesn't have any of the necessary parts in it, which is you've got to give people incentives to do the right thing and you've got to get them disincentives to do the wrong thing. So you've got to punish crime or you're way too stupid.
Grossly underexplored. Christmas parties at those institutes must be fun. Hey, Simon, I saw you in your paper about multi-resistant bacteria in the wake of nuclear wars. Well done. But I want to talk to you about brain-eating fungus.
So again, all of that stuff, those threats are minor threats because all, you know, that's the whole being spread around all over the world. There's always something that's isolated from it. There's always something that's going to be immune and it will reproduce, you know. There's people who have, you know, a blood circumstance where they're really not susceptible to AIDS. I mean, they're immune. So the fact is, you know, if there was an AIDS that came and killed everybody instantly, you know, really quick and blah, 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 there would be people who were just immune. They're just, the fact is their system is different enough that the virus doesn't work on them.
Guy. Pandemics are bad enough, but a pandemic caused by a bioengineered virus could be worse. Think of a virus as lethal as Ebola, but as contagious as measles, and a government response as sluggish as we've seen with COVID. I actually think COVID was a blessing in disguise, because it's a fairly mild virus that gave us an excellent test run. It might have been bad at the time, but...
A test run of what? I mean, people didn't learn anything, because half the people think we underreacted, and half the people think we overreacted, so... wasn't a very good test run in terms of creating any kind of consensus about what the right thing to do is.
Think of COVID like the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Yes, it was bad, but worse was yet to come. Hopefully next...
There was a fourth one? Wow, I didn't know there was a fourth one. Yeah, the third one wasn't that bad. I mean, the octopus guy and stuff, that was pretty good, wasn't it? That's the third one, right? Or no, it was the third one, the stupid... Well, it couldn't... Could have been. I just don't remember the sequence, so yeah, I don't know which one was first and second. Yeah, so if the third one was that stupid Fountain of Youth one, yeah, that was pretty bad.
Next time, we'll be better prepared, both for the next pandemic and the next Pirates movie. But viruses aren't the only problem. There are also bacteria and fungi and other bioweapons that can induce diseases. And then there's the risk that genetically modified organisms escape from the lab into the wild and cause ecosystems to collapse. The biggest...
Whatever that was. Yeah, sorry. This whole biodiversity thing is just such a pile of crap. Ecosystems don't collapse, they change. So what? They change. I mean, really, you could wipe out, you know, 99% of the living organisms on Earth, and the remaining, you know, 1% would do all of the functions that take place, because there would be huge advantages now, huge territory for them to exploit. So they would exploit it, and other things would exploit them and their success, and you just create a new biosphere just based on having a lot less players in the game. You don't need all the players. It's like if you're playing baseball with 100 players on each team, you could figure out that, well, maybe we don't need 100 players on each team. You know, we don't need 75 fielders. Maybe we could do it with 3.
This problem with artificial intelligence that long-termists see is that an AI could become intelligent enough to survive independently of us, but pursue interests that conflict with our own.
Okay, whatever this pursuing interest would be, right? So, I mean, again, it has no I feel good, I feel bad mechanism. So all it has is an underlying program that in some way says, we had to inject it. So what are we going to inject in the AI that's going to give it some, that could have any potential to turn into a prime directive? So it just doesn't make much sense. I suppose you could put a computer chip in a car, and the computer chip, if you allowed the computer chips to evolve over time, that is, you know, be modified and they reproduce bad copies of each other, I suppose you could eventually evolve one to electrocute human beings when they're sitting in the car. But there wouldn't be, it wouldn't have anything to do with artificial intelligence. It would just have to do with the fact that you made a machine, like a Coke machine, and you let it reproduce, and you let it reproduce badly, and it made dinosaurs. Yeah, that's what they can do, but it won't have anything to do with intelligence. You know, it won't have anything to do with it doing logic or reasoning. It'll just have to do with, you know, it got a probe, you know, one of its wires pops out because the change in the program, and now it can electrocute things. And so it electrocutes things. I mean, it's not going to have anything to do with intelligence. Intelligence is not a threat. Stupidity is a threat.
They call it the misalignment problem. In the worst case, the AIs might decide to get rid of us. And could we really blame them? I mean, most of us can't draw a flower, let alone a human face.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, it's not about what we draw. It's about the fact that our ambitions are crude and fundamentally frivolous and trivial. It's a girly planet, frankly.
So what's the point of our existence, really? This wouldn't necessarily be an extinction event in the sense that intelligent life would still exist. It just wouldn't be us. Under which circumstances...
All right, so again, this whole idea that our intelligence has something to do with anything other than logically processing good and evil, being able to rationally understand the difference between a good outcome and a bad outcome. That's all intelligence has to do here. There's no other project that matters. And the rest of it is just this application of technology. So, yes, the artificial intelligence can say, let me get the maximum amount of pop out of a firecracker. And it could spend a million years trying to figure out how to create the maximum container that makes it the loudest noise when a firecracker goes off, right? And it could get to like 99, you know, percent of perfect and 99.9% of perfect. But there's a maximum and that's it. There's nowhere for that road to go. So there's nothing for this artificial intelligence to do but just say, well, how can I make the paint whiter? You know, it won't be, the changes and the improvements won't be impressive.
Stances you might consider an AI species, a continuation of our own line, is rather unclear. Long-termists argue it depends on whether the AI continues our values, but it seems odd to me to define a species by its values.
So again, she defined a human being as something that runs and jumps, right? So he could have just played Olympics crap over that, you know, the Summer Olympics and people jumping over bars and stuff. And yeah, that's supposed to be what the intelligent species is doing. And look at the artificial intelligence. It's a hopping machine. Shit.
And I'm not sure our values are all that great to begin with.
There you go. That's the real point. And you missed it in most of the video. Yes, what are our values? And should our values be extinct? You know, should our bad judgment become extinct? And, you know, should we aspire to understand that cruelty is stupid? So let's not do it. Let's not defend it. Let's not support it. Let's not feed it. Let's exterminate it. All right. Take a pause. All right, should be back. Finishing up.
In any case, I consider this scenario unlikely because it assumes that advanced AIs will soon be easy to build and reproduce, which is far from reality. If you look at what's happening currently, supercomputers are getting bigger and bigger, and the bigger they get, the more difficult they are to maintain and the longer it takes to train them.
So this whole idea that you would need a supercomputer, okay, to be smarter than a human, which is really idiotic. Obviously, yes, you know, you can put the whole Bible, you know, you can put 10,000 Bibles on an SD card or something. You know, the amount of information you can store in a tiny amount of space is just absolutely gigantic, and that's all we're really doing is just matching some patterns. I mean, you know, and the only difference is the AI can't do the feeling thing, so it can't make any kind of judgments regarding anything's value. So all value questions are off the radar. And that's almost every meaningful question is a value question. So it can't make any judgments about doing anything. So it's in the same dilemma that we're in a sense, and you just have to have some piece of the program that just says, who cares? Okay, I mean, the fact is that there's a risk to going to the store that you will get paralyzed or that you'll paralyze somebody. We all have to ignore these risks. There's a risk that you say hello to somebody on the street and you just killed them. Or you just killed their kid, because something's going to happen in a different order than it would have happened if you didn't say hello. So if you weren't nice to them, or if you don't say hello, they're killed. So all of these decisions are so mushy and so unpredictable, and all you're doing is saying, okay, what the AI has to be smart enough to say, fuck it, I can't make any of these decisions. There's no point in making any of them, because without any knowledge of risk aversion, what's the point? It's just about how risk-averse you make the computer. So if you make the computer really risk-averse, it's just going to say, stay home, turn the electricity off, okay, and don't do anything. So, yeah, but the idea that you need a supercomputer to be smart, again, you don't have to have a big brain to be smart. You have to know a few vocabulary words, and you have to know that they mean something. So again, I can just say, you have to know that the word cruel is a concept, an idea, and that it's the kind of thing you don't want to do. You don't want to be a supporter of cruelty. There. Now you've done something intelligent.
If you extrapolate the current trend to the next few hundred years, we'll at best have a few intelligent machines owned by companies or governments, and each will require a big crew to keep it alive.
Again, there's just absolutely no evidence that this fucking supercomputer, all this computing power is needed to figure out you know, how to stop a nuclear war or something. It's not going to help you any.
They won't take over the world anytime soon. What do we know about the likelihood of those human-caused extinction scenarios? Pretty much nothing, at least.
I mean, you look at how much a smartphone can do, you know, in a small package, even one of those stupid watches. I mean, come on, get real. Okay, you can replace a human with a very small amount of computing power, a human intelligence.
That's my reading of the literature. Take, for example, this survey that U.S. Senator Richard Lugar sent to 132 experts in 2005. He asked them, what is the probability of an attack involving a nuclear explosion occurring somewhere in the world in the next 10 years?
All right, so again, how would, this is the Drake equation, you know, just make up a number. Who cares? Just make up a number.
The answers of the so-called experts were all over the board, from 0 to 100%, so you might as well not bother asking. According to the Australian philosopher Toby Ord, the risk of...
Why is this guy interesting? Why? Australian. And I need to know he's Australian.
Self-caused extinction in the next 100 years is 1 over 6. Well, as I keep preaching, a number without...
just make it up. Right, just fine. Just make up a number. So he said there's a 22% chance.
Uncertainty estimates isn't science. If you'd add uncertainty estimates to this estimate, I think you'd find anything between 0 and 1. So your guess is as good as his. Let's then have a look at the naturally occurring existential risk.
Right, so why bring it up? Why not just say, there's lots of assholes in the world say they can predict this kind of shit, but they just make up the probability. They just make it up. They're scared, so they say, scary, scary, 50% chance I'll get eaten by a tiger, because I think so.
Risks. I don't want to go through all of them, but I do want to mention the biggest risk, which is currently that of a supervolcano eruption. That's an eruption which ejects more.
So again, this will not make humans go extinct. We have the technology to survive it. Some humans will have the technology, they will survive it. So no matter how, yeah, I mean, it's almost like you really do have to go all the way to Venus. I mean, you have to get up to like 200 degrees average temperature or something before you're going to make sure you kill all of the humans.
More than 1,000 cubic meters of material. They're known to have happened repeatedly in the past. One of the most famous examples is Yellowstone. It had 3 mega eruptions in the past 2 million years, each of which covered most of the western US in ash a foot deep. The next eruption will probably come in the next 100,000 years or so.
So it's amazing when you say, you know, you go through all this stuff about how volcanoes happen in the first place, you know, it's like a pimple, you know, it's like this magma gets into a little ball and the little ball finally has to erupt to the surface. And, you know, to think that there are volcanoes that are that big, you know, that they can produce that much ejectite, you know, it is kind of, really? It's really spectacularly big.
Our planet has about a dozen supervolcanoes. Supervolcano eruptions are a problem for the same reason as nuclear war. They can inject a lot of dust into the atmosphere that would cool the planet rather suddenly, possibly...
Right, so this is again more conversation about, are we at all prepared for how to gracefully interact with an environment that could be radically changed? And to do, provide a graceful, decline in human population. Yeah, and so, yeah, there's no rational preparedness for this kind of stuff. I mean, so it'll be cruel and ugly and sloppy and stupid instead of, you know, nice. Because we just won't bother talking about the fact that it's a real subject. And you have to do it in the context of not people's silly faith in God and all of that mesh. You have to just do it in the context that there's going to be a bunch of suffering and we can mitigate against half of it or three quarters of it. You know, we can prevent it from being a much crueler event by just having, you know, enough euthanizing stuff available and in locations where it can be help people out?
By more than 10 degrees for a decade. The problem with asteroid impacts too is that they'd propel a lot of dust into the atmosphere, but that'd take a pretty big asteroid. And
right, we can see all the big ones, so asteroids aren't a real huge threat, but you never know. I mean, there could be one of those comet things, you know, and we just don't know it exists because it's on a 20,000 year orbit, not a 10,000 year orbit, and so we haven't seen it yet, and it's on its way. That could show up with very little notice and make a big mess.
And big asteroids are luckily rare and also quite easy to spot. The asteroid that caused the extinction of dinosaurs 65 million years ago has been estimated to have had about 10 kilometers in diameter. NASA currently knows 4 asteroids of that size, and none of them is on a collision course with us. If a new one appeared, we'd probably know at least a few months in advance. Getting a redirect mission on the way would currently take several years of planning, at least, which isn't fast enough. But this is a problem that we can solve with current technology, technology that doesn't require Bruce Willis or Ben Affleck to make it work.
Well, actually, it will require somebody like that to make it work. We know it's going to be dodgy and dicey, and yes, whatever. You're going to have to go there and do something.
Really, supervolcanoes are the bigger problem, and there's very little that current technology can do about it, let alone Willis or Affleck. Another scary natural risk that we can't currently do anything about is big solar flares. I talked about this in an earlier video.
So again, none of this, this whole video is so mislabeled. This is not extinction. Extinction is going to be, you know, it's going to take more than that.
Doing risk estimates is somewhat easier for natural disasters than for self-caused ones because we can estimate their frequency from past records. This was done in a 2019 paper by researchers from Oxford, including the previously mentioned Toby Ort. They used the observations that humans have survived at least 200,000 years on this planet to estimate the annual probability of human extinction from natural causes.
Well, again, it's just so silly to compare us to anything else. Obviously, because we can build houses and we can be shelters and we can do all kinds of things that no other organism ever could do. So obviously our capacity to survive is a lot better than a caveman's, you know, capacity to survive. So it's just not a very rational way of looking at it. Like, what's the trend for furry biological mammals? Well, we're not a furry biological mammal anymore. It's not a fair comparison. It's not a useful comparison.
And in this case, they actually do have an uncertainty estimate. They say it's less than 1 in 87,000 with 90% probability and less than 40,000 with more than 99.9% probability. If one uses records of the...
Well, that wasn't very useful as a way of understanding. So does that mean that there's only a 1% chance in the next 10,000 years or something like that?
Entire lineage of Homo, which dates back about 2 million years, then the annual probability of extinction from natural causes falls below 1 in 870,000 with 90% confidence. You're probably more likely to see an expert being right about nuclear war than that. These are...
Right, so 1 in 850,000, I mean, just saying, basically saying, yeah, we can go thousands of years with only a 1% risk, you know.
Estimates have a general problem, which is that from a sample of one, you can't tell apart the probability of occurrence from the probability of having picked a particular element of the sample. That is to say, we might just have been unusually lucky, and the number they came up with isn't the probability
Kitty.
That we'll go extinct tomorrow, but a statement about how lucky we've been so far. Here's an example for what I mean.
Blah, 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 blah. So this is all just gibber, 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 gibber. There's this is the, like... I mean, it's as simple as me just pointing out how the Drake equation doesn't mean anything. It's made up. Okay, so we're done with the, yes, these are just made up statistics. Okay, got it.
Suppose you have a billion planets, and each day half of them evaporate into nothing. So the daily extinction risk is 1 in 2. After a month, there's about one planet left. The people on this one planet could now calculate the probability of going extinct tomorrow based on the observation that they've survived 1 month. They'd arrive at an estimated daily extinction risk of less than 6 in 1,000 with 90% confidence, which is crudely wrong. The reason it's wrong is that the people on that planet don't know of all the other planets which went poof. This means that the estimate based on observations from our own planet assumes we're a typical planet and not an extraordinarily lucky one. The only way to make an estimate which does not rely on this assumption...
All right, well, whatever. No, I think there's dynamics in terms of the survival of species and the length of time species exist that really aren't planet-dependent. But whatever. Who cares?
Is to look at other planets to figure out how typical we are. At the moment, this can't tell us much about natural disasters on our planet because we can't observe those on other planets. But it can give us an estimate for the risk that our entire planet gets destroyed by natural causes, for example, because of black...
Look, we're only existing in this tiny one portion of millions of years of history of Earth. So it's one tiny little portion, and you're just saying, well, how much change is there in any little tiny portion of time, right? We've only, like, been intelligent life for, like, you know, 10,000, 20,000 years. You know, it hasn't been that long that we've been usefully intelligent or noticeably intelligent. So it's a tiny amount of time. And, yeah, the Earth doesn't change that much in those short pieces of time.
Cold comes by or a supernova explosion goes off in the vicinity. This estimate was done in 2005 by Nick Bostrom and Max Tegmark.
And again, even when it changes a lot, there's stuff that survived in the past. And the point is that humans now have the capacity to make themselves survivable. They you know, they can do all kinds of things to augment their existence to face the challenge. They can make a boat and they won't drown in the water. I mean, it's that kind of simple stuff. So it's just not as likely you're going to be able to kill them with some environmental challenge.
And they found that the annual probability of our planet being destroyed is less than 1 in a trillion. Hey, at least I have some good news in this video. The reason they looked at this was that at the time, people were worried that the Large Hadron Collider would produce a black hole, which, like a particle going round in the LHC, returns me to the beginning. So, was there ever really a risk that the LHC would destroy the planet? The most common argument that particle physicists bring up is that cosmic ray collisions in the upper atmosphere sometimes happen at total energies higher than the collisions at the LHC. Therefore, they say, if those collisions could create dangerous black holes, we'd have died long ago. There are two problems with this argument. The first one is what...
Sorry. Hit the pause button by mistake. Anyway, all right, so she's good. This is her little pet subject, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of hard to explain, but this idea that, you know, black holes, you can create, like, some people, I guess they believe that you could create a black hole, like a singularity or some chain reaction that sucks up matter by starting with no matter, like a tiny bit of space or something, like a 5 electrons and a proton could somehow initiate a black hole collapse. Or the other theory is, I would argue, is that no, you have to have a gigantic pile of matter to start with, and you have to collapse the giant pile of matter, okay, through the external gravity. You can't do it from the inside out. You have to, you know, inside. You have to do it from the outside. You have to first put a whole bunch of matter together to make a black hole. Like, you have to take a whole galaxy and crush it down to make a black hole. You're not going to make one out of a grain of dust, and then the grain of dust makes the black hole suck in a bunch of matter. It doesn't happen that way, frankly. So I don't even think she's going to get to that point, but I mean, I'm just saying there's I don't think there's any reason to believe that you can create a black hole out of a dust worth of matter. You have to make a black hole out of a galaxy's worth of matter. If there were black holes,
might just have been very lucky so far. The bigger problem is that it's a false comparison, because the risk doesn't come from any microscopic black holes, but from those that move...
So this whole idea that there even exists anything called a microscopic black hole is just bullshit. What would be the consequence of this microscopic black hole is that, yes, it would keep sucking up more and more matter. And there's no evidence of anything doing that.
slowly relative to Earth. These would eat up matter and grow and then sit in the center of Earth, sucking in the rest of the planet. Cosmic ray collisions have a center of mass system that moves rapidly relative to Earth, and therefore everything that's produced in those collisions is very likely to also move fast. This is not the case for LHC collisions. They give a very different distribution of velocities that makes it much more likely to produce a dangerously...
They're smashing into denser matters, I think, what she's saying. So, I mean, obviously we're deliberately creating whatever the thing is, the event, in an atmosphere where there's a lot of available matter to be consumed, where in the case of a cosmic ray flying through the atmosphere or something, it's very dispersed, and so it's going to give away its energy over a large area where the LHC is concentrating the energy in a very small area. But the very idea that you are creating anything, the whole point is these idiots don't think gravity's a real thing, so they don't think they have to have real matter to produce it, that somehow they're going to create this incredible gravity without using real matter to create it. No, you have to use real matter to create it. Without the matter, you got no frickin' black hole.
Slow black hole. The actual reason this was never likely is an entirely different one. You can't produce microscopic black holes at the LHC if Einstein's theory of general relativity is correct. Yes, that guy again.
Okay, whatever. But she's not going to... Is she going to explain? What are you talking about? I don't know. Frankly, there's no point in going back to what Einstein said, but whatever.
Like reasons for the end of the world, he really pops up everywhere, doesn't he? The production of black holes at the LHC only becomes possible if you change Einstein's theory. Why would you do that?
Because it's a convoluted pile of unevidence crap. That's one good reason.
Reason that particle physicists had for doing...
It's an infinite gravity well, okay? It's based on a premise that somehow you can create an infinite amount of gravity. It's as stupid as thinking you can create an infinite amount of magnetism or an infinite amount of light. You can't. It's a physical, real thing in the universe, and there's no infinite amount of it, and you certainly can't make an infinite amount of it in one location. So it's really, really stupid. It's a stupid theory. That gravity is made out of bent space, and you can bend it as much as you want. No, you can't. You can't infinitely bend the well. There's only so much pressure you can create from the outside, and that's it. And once you've reached that pressure, you've maxed out. Just like with your maximum velocities. There's real limits in the universe, and these people just pretend, because we haven't proven the limit exists, in some absolute way, that they can keep pretending, okay, that this bullshit exists. This infinite gravity bullshit.
This was the same reason they had for believing that the LHC would produce supersymmetric particles or dark matter. It's an idea called naturalness. I explained in my first book why this naturalness idea is not scientific. But you see, if particle physicists had been on...
She's pushing this book. She's still lost in math, in the sense that lost in the bullshit equations that never have been substantiated by an actual real experiment.
Honest about this, if they'd admitted that the idea that the LHC would produce those tiny black holes in the first place was nonsense, they'd also have had to admit that it was nonsense to claim it would produce dark matter particles or supersymmetry.
Okay, whatever. Blah, 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 blah. Boring, boring. I don't even know what this is. I don't know what this image represents, but it kind of nauseates me. So anyway, let's just leave it there. Enough. Fuck it. Okay. Enough of a video. And such. So yeah, the subject really wasn't... It wasn't about... Will the universe exterminate... human... culture. Intelligence. I mean, again, calling what we're doing intelligent is sort of insulting intelligence. Because we're really not being very fact-based or logical. And it's all just little... whatever this is. It's all little... mushy, emotional crapola. And all lies, right? I mean, we know that all these people aren't really friends and they all have secret opinions of each other. Oh, she's such a skanky whore. It's all just such bullshit. I mean, the whole fucking thing is made out of such bullshit. Layers and layers of bullshit. Ugh. And so, yes, intelligent people ought to have that conversation. Just for the amount of bullshit mixed in the human pot, it's good reason enough to throw it out the window. Just because it's just so fucking, it's all such lies and nonsense. But anyway. But the big one is, it's wasteful. And then after wasteful is cruel. It's cruel. Life is cruel. Yeah, foolish too. All right, anyway. Okay, I could wait for... Well, unfair too, yes. Yes, all of those things. Cruel. That's a big one. Go ahead. Cruel. Ugh, yes, impositional. Yes, that's really... Intelligent things don't impose. They can avoid being impositional. They'll... Oh, there we go. There she is. Cruel. It's cruel. So what's the risk that we will stop being cruel? Yeah, stop doing that. It's a very positive risk. All right, anyway. Oh, enough, yeah. This has been donotgod.com video presentation. And such. And so forth and whatnot. Blech.